Welcome back to another episode of Winning Through Culture. I am here with my wonderful co-host, Amanda Kramer. Good day, Amanda.
Good day, Tim.
It is good to be together today. We have a episode that will be an interesting one.
It'll be
a fun one.
Yeah.
So one of our listeners recently asked me a fantastic question. And as I stumbled through the answer, I realized this is probably a good podcast episode. In light of our desire to kind of shed some light, not only on all the rainbows and unicorns of culture, but some of the challenges. And his question was, how do you measure culture?
It's a hard one. It's something that we consistently have dialogue around, but I don't know that anyone's ever asked us before. So,
well, it was one that I stumbled through an answer on, and I figured, you know what? We should do a podcast and work through the answer.
I think that's perfect.
So
we'll
that's
dive
what
in.
We're gonna do today. So,
where do you want to start?
Well, I guess I could share the answer I gave in the moment, which was not terribly well thought out, or maybe we should start with the fact that we've had some more time to ponder that question and lay out some of the things that we do believe are valuable measures of culture.
Well, I think from a leadership standpoint, it might be good for you to give your raw answer. As we've discussed in previous episodes, there is that kind of utopia, that intentional state that you're working to get to. And then there's like the reality of where you are today. And I think as we discussed, making sure that we're providing the context of we might not be at our ideal state today when this particular topic, like how do you measure culture? There's not a scorecard that you literally can print off and be like, oh, check plus.
Yep, not so that I'm aware of.
Not that we're aware of, at least. We've kind of built our own, and I think that's the dialogue that we'll have. But if you were to answer that question just rawly.
Well, I mean, the answer I gave in the moment that caught me off guard a little bit was first and foremost, and it's a topic we've discussed before, but is your company perennially recognized as a best place to work? And I use that as a reference point only because that's your employees telling a disinterested third party that has a pretty significant vetting process why they feel like your company is a best place to work or not. They may tell you that too. And so one of the reasons I know at the Plura Group, we've used that as a process we go through every year is just to get feedback
right.
in an unfiltered manner from people and to basically then have a firm that scientifically benchmarks us against other businesses like ours.
In similar size. That's an
similar
important
size,
factor.
Similar size business, similar size relative to number of employees, and obviously in our local Charlotte marketplace. So I said, you know, that's one way to measure it is where you go. And I know there are other, I think there's a tool called Culture Index. I think there are other ways that a company can benchmark where their culture is through feedback from their employees. That was my first answer. And then my second one was, well, another way you could measure culture is, are you able to hold on to good employees and people that are in the right seat, right person, right seat, as we say in EOS? Are you retaining those people and are they growing and thriving? And again, to your point, not really a scorecard metric, but a visual, tangible metric relative to retention of employees and are they engaged in their job and staying? That led me then to another thought. And I said, you know, the other side of that though is a measure of a good culture could actually be the people that leave your company. Because if your culture is intentional and well-defined, you're going to make hiring decisions that seem like a great decision on both parties' behalf. And then that person actually gets into the work, gets into the culture and the environment of the company and realizes this is not for me. And they select themselves out even before you do. So may seem like a strange measurement. I hadn't thought of it, but I said, you know, because we got into a dialogue about, well, what about the people that leave? And I said, obviously, if they're good people, you didn't want them to leave and they're leaving, it may be they had a life change, but it may be that you need to pay attention to your culture. The last thing I said in the answer to on the spot question of how do you measure culture is just really, you know, are people happy? Are they socializing? You know, there's a study the Gallup organization did years ago, or at least in the last decade, that said a company had a really high prospect of employee retention when employees had friends at the company, meaning they may not have been friends when they went to work at the company, but they became friends and socialized and had a true friendship. And that was a really high predictor of employee engagement and retention was that they had a friend at work. So I drew on that as a part of my answer, but you know, it was a good question. Again, maybe there is a scorecard or somebody that's figured this out there. They hear this podcast, they can call us and tell us. But absent that, I do think it's definitely worth some discussion on, you know, how do you measure successful winning culture?
Well, and I think we should dig in a little bit deeper to the three that you really identified, because I would have to agree that those are probably the most forward available metrics, put that in air quote, mm-hmm. metrics that you could look at to measure your culture. You know, we've done episodes around highlighting organizations that have been awarded best place to work. And we have talked to TJ as it relates to how that all comes to fruition. And from a third party standpoint, how you get your points and your total, and then you ultimately get ranked based on companies of like size from an employee standpoint. But when we look at those three independently, the best places to work is an opportunity. And I'm sure that many organizations do this as well. And we do too, but we have dialogues throughout the year. So when we get to the place that you are completing a survey about the place in which you work, you are really, in my own words, thinking about the value that that organization provides to you and the value that you're able to provide to it. And we are working to build a community. And so best places to work is a measurement of how sound is that community as a whole. So if an organization is not yet utilizing some type of third-party assessment, so to speak, what do you think are some ways that they could benchmark themselves if maybe that investment right now isn't feasible?
Well, I mean, if they're in a community that does have a best places to work, I mean, that is not something you have to pay to participate in.
Correct.
And I know there are other, you know, the best places to work I'm referencing is through the American City Business Journals, which is a national organization with business journals in most major cities. It's a big part of their programming they offer in their local community. But I also know there are other, through C12, there's a Christian Best Places to Work organization. There's some larger national organizations. So that's one way that's not a cost item other than time. The other way, and this is something you do in our own organization, we've talked about before, but it's really having what you call culture conversations, and they have to be set up in an appropriate manner, because the whole idea of that is that the person's going to be authentic and perhaps vulnerable, and there's going to be confidentiality around that. So again, I think as a business owner, having those types of conversations, and they can be like really informal, like where you're just kind of getting a pulse of things, or
right.
What you do, Amanda, I know is a lot more formal in the sense that you're really asking some specific questions, trying to understand what's working and then what needs attention. Obviously, when you do that, the confidentiality component of that does make it a challenge for the person that's having that conversation. And depending on the agreements you make with the employee, you can't maybe necessarily tackle something very specifically.
Right.
You have to kind of take it as a general thing. So I know we've navigated that. You've done a great job of that.
Oh, thank you.
And, you know, at the same time, I know you've had some conversations that have illuminated some areas to improve and that have to be handled in a way that honors the confidentiality that is committed to the conversation. So that's an investment of time, but
it
not
is.
An investment of money.
Right. Well, and one thing that I think would be important for an organization, if you are going down the path of doing culture conversations or having a feedback loop in that way, and you do have somebody, I think it's very important that it is someone that is not seen or has the role or responsibility of HR. But I do think it's important that that individual can use some type of rubric. And by that, I mean just asking the individual that you're having dialogue with, what would you give the organization as a whole as a grade, right? So if it's A or B or a C minus, you can do plus minus. That way you have thematically something to base your progress on year over year. That helps you. If you're just having dialogue and getting feedback, that's wonderful. But I would encourage, if you're going down that path and you don't have a similar assessment with best places to work or something along those lines, that you incorporate some type of grade so you know where you are as an overall organization.
And I do know if it's an investment that someone's willing to make, there are outside organizations, I know Culture IQ is one of them, that will come in with their own people and the assessment
Absolutely.
Process and provide feedback. And then to the extent the business wants to kind of help map out process for improving the culture. So that is something that's out there to be invested in. I'm not personally experienced it, but I've heard great things about it from people that have. And we're fortunate to have someone like you that can do a lot of that internally in our own organization, do it well. As I was listening to you, there's another, and again, I don't know if this is a measurement. I'm a little bit scorecard oriented with data and metrics, but this is not a topic I've ever figured out a way to do that with. But I think back to our episode with Jared from Spiracle. They do a annual retreat with their entire organization. They literally close the business for effectively 48 hours and do a retreat. Right. And I know one of our future guests is doing the same thing. And I'm going to have him talk about that as well. He's doing in a very intentional and organized way some really neat stuff I can't wait to talk about in a future episode. But it's an investment of time and money. And that's a pretty bold thing to shut an entire company down for 2 days.
Yeah.
And not everybody can afford to do that given the business they're in. But it is, I think if you're doing that as a business owner and you're making that investment and people are like fully engaged, I think it's a pretty good sign that the culture's healthy.
Yeah, I would agree.
I mean, if everybody's got a reason why they can't be there,
yeah,
that should tell you something too. It's
yes.
Like, well, okay, I got to do this or I got to do that. And I'm sure a lot of people, to a certain extent, since it is in the instant of Spiracle, from what I remember, it's during the work week. The future guest we have actually does it on a weekend and gets all of his people to participate and turns it into a very fun celebration and recognition of all people in the organization. So that's another way to do it and to measure the engagement of everybody in the company at those events.
Well, and that's just one of many ways I think you can quantify the impact that you're making from your culture and what that looks like in your organization. So we talked about some of that more assessment. You can ultimately give yourself a score in some way, shape, or form, whether you're using something internally, a rubric you've created, or you're using an external resource that you are investing in. So on the other side of that is the employee retention and or the opposite, someone choosing to exit because they are not a right fit and they've determined that as they've been inside your organization. So what are some of the pitfalls or things that people would want to keep in mind as you're stepping into measuring your culture around retention or the lack thereof?
Well, I think on the retention side, if you have a good handle on the fact that you've got the right people in your company in the right seats, obviously you want to hold on to those people.
Mm-hmm.
And the employment landscape, you know, it's a very interesting environment because their employment participation rate is down. The economy is faltering, so some say, but the number of people working and available to work is less than the demand to meet it.
Right.
And so it becomes even more imperative that you hold on to your good people in this environment. So I do think one of the hard reflections, and I know I've dealt with this in the span of owning a business, is when you lose somebody that you feel like you shouldn't have lost, and whether you saw it coming or not, if it's because of something about the culture of the organization that caused them to leave, you know, I think some people leave for life change reasons, and that's totally understandable. But yeah. If it's something like, wow, this violated a core value,
right.
Or
something we could have controlled.
Yeah, something you had some control or influence over. That's a hard look in the mirror type moment that I think is worthy of reflecting on.
Yeah.
Because I think the easy thing is to excuse it away, play the blame game, and then just say, well, you know, they didn't belong here anyways. And that's pretty much a cop out in my mind, but it's to look at, you know, what happened. And I can think of a couple of instances in the last 20 years of owning a business that happened. And when I did take a reflection on it, again, every party has a contributory negligence, if you will, to the experience. They're definitely, and it's not that the business was fully at fault. It usually means there was not the right type of communication taking place leading up to that moment. But that is a measurement, you know, when good people leave. And again, I think conversely, the happy side of that is another measurement is the tenure of the people that are in your organization. And there are going to be people that may not have a huge career path in the role they're in, but clearly to the extent that that opportunity exists, it's great to see people grow up in an organization. And I think that's a healthy reflection of the culture. And in the case where their role does not allow kind of an upward growth mobility track, then are they basically expanding their skill sets, you know, expanding their self-awareness and confidence in the role that they're in. And I think that's a positive sign of growth. So that's kind of the first side of the retention equation. The second side then is, which I know we've experienced, I think every business has, we won't go down the road of previous episode where, you know, how do you get rid of people that you know aren't a fit?
Because right.
We've kind of tackled that topic. But what happens when someone leaves and you realize, you know what, they weren't a fit and they made that decision before right. we did? And I think, again, that can be a sign of a healthy culture that right. you can say, oh my gosh, we lost an employee. But if the reason you lost them is, in retrospect, and I can think of some of these situations too, that you're like, you know what, they really weren't a fit and we just didn't get around to dealing with it for whatever reason. And so they leave and it's like, well, you know what? That's a validation that the culture we have is not for everyone.
Well,
which is not the objective.
Correct. Yeah. And when we think about those instances, there's an opportunity, I think, for business owners, entrepreneurs, leaders in general to utilize that reflection moment, but really leaning into an acronym that we love and use all the time, which is GWC. So mm-hmm. as an individual in their particular role, their function in your business, your firm, whatever you choose to call your company, they have the, let's call it capacity, right? So you have the individual who gets it.
They get the job.
They get the job. They understand it. They fully can utilize their talents to have awareness around what they're responsible for. They have the want, right? They want to do the work. And then they have the capacity, the actual, the mental, emotional, physical capacity to execute on the role that they know of and have the get it component mm-hmm. to it. So those three things I think are important as you are reflecting on if someone does exit, whether it's for a personal reason or whatever the situation might be, really leaning into what we consider GWC will help in mm-hmm. the ability for you to kind of earmark where your culture is. Was that a positive or a negative to the culture impact?
Addition or subtraction
right.
to the overall culture of the organization.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Something to consider.
Well, and I think the GWC model, what I love about it is it's, you can keep it simple. You don't have to get caught up in a lot of extraneous stuff. I think everybody knows, does somebody get the job? And the responsibility they have in the organization, the want it becomes very apparent by their attitude and their behavior. And then the capacity really is a function of, can they do the job? Are they doing the job? And we've both seen people that get the job and want it, but don't have the capacity. We've seen people that get the job and have the capacity for the job, but don't want it.
Don't want it, yeah.
So that's a good way to have, you know, it's a very practical tool to kind of assess in the situation where there is turnover, you know, was this healthy for the culture or not?
Well, and if you're looking at your accountability chart or your organizational chart, whatever terminology you use for it and how your business is structured, if you put a percentage on the number of seats that you have on that particular chart and they have all three, the get it, want it, have the capacity to do it, and you put a percentage of out of every 10, 8 have all, or they're all GWC, you can also create a scorecard metric, air quotes, around the health of your organization, culturally speaking, too. So I think there's a lot of ways for you to take a baseline and to figure out how you want to measure culture in your organization. But there's some really good points around the retention.
Yeah. The real reason that we thought this was a good podcast to do is, you know, it's great to talk about culture. It's a little bit more nebulous to really define what mm-hmm. is working or not. Again, as we've discussed, there's some obvious things, but my desire for anyone listening to this podcast, our desire is that this has given you some ideas, spurned some thoughts to yep. how can I measure the health of my culture in a very practical way, in a way that may be, again, difficult to assess, but give yourself an honest assessment.
Yeah.
And then ultimately, the most important thing is once you've done that reflection, done that measurement assessment is, so what are you going to do to make it better?
Yeah. So
there's that.
Yeah, there's yeah. that. That is a whole topic
yes.
that we tackle,
another I think, episode.
In small pieces along the way.
Well, yeah, very true.
But from a standpoint of the three that we talked about, right? So having that assessment, so we reference best places to work and getting that feedback and having the baseline.
Yeah, third party assessment.
Yeah, having that third party component. Number two being the ability for you to have reflection around the retention, whether that is a positive or a negative, mm-hmm. someone chooses to stay. I do think there's a whole dialogue to be had about individuals who are loyal in the sense of not having just blind loyalty to the organization. We talked a little bit about somebody growing up in the organization, making sure that that person is being fed in their growth opportunity and that they're not just placating you, right? Like they're here for the long haul, but not just blindly loyal. They are engaged in that.
They know why they're there.
Yeah. So keep that in mind. You don't want somebody that's just totally complacent.
Yeah.
Now, granted, there are those individuals who are just steady. They get their job. They love it. They're really good at it. And they are golden. They are just continuing down that path. And that is enough for them. And that's great. And you need to earmark who those people are. But making sure that they're just not following blindly. Like they are engaged in the conversation.
Well, and to your point, not everyone needs to grow in the sense of additional responsibilities. I would argue, though, that everyone needs to grow, at least in their own personal and professional sphere of who they are as a person, both personally and professionally.
I would agree.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So then the third piece.
Well, I mean, the third piece really is, again, I'll call it observational, whether it's a formal process of sitting down with clients and having what you call culture conversation. Mm-hmm. And then again, in a confidential manner, bringing that back to an action item and or whether it's a retreat or again, very informally, just talking to people about their experience with the business. That's really a way of measuring engagement. And again, that's from no investment other than time to maybe a hefty investment of a retreat with an offsite and different experiences. So I think that's kind of the third element of this is use an outside party, number one, that is benchmarking and you're not filtering, you know, believing your own biases. Number two is just looking at on a regular basis who's joining your organization and why and who's leaving your organization and why. And then the third is the conversations and the experiences and how engaged are people in those conversations and experiences. But again, the burden, candidly, which we know from firsthand experience, and I would emphasize is don't have the conversations about culture and not do anything about it.
Yes, that is the number one negative result. If you do nothing with what you heard, and we've had an episode about this, but I'll just quickly touch on it, is when I'm having dialogues, I'm looking thematically. So going back to that confidentiality component is I'm not going to then take something and be like, so-and-so is in this space right now, and here's what we need to do about it. It's more I'm hearing from the greater population. These are the shifts that we can make because you're not going to be able to do everything. And I know that in my dialogue, how I set up every conversation is I want the good, the bad, and the ugly. And please know that there are things we're going to be able to tackle and change or modify today. There are things that are going to be shorter term, longer term. And there are some things that we might, you know, have to move at a glacial pace on. And, you know, there's an ask for understanding and an ask for the ability to just have that open conversation. Knowing that, you know, we will communicate what we can do, what we can't do, and why, but please know that that's not always going to be like instant gratification.
Well, you know, it speaks to the fact that communication is culture, culture is communication. And so the communication's key. I actually spoke to another listener yesterday, interestingly enough, reached out and was having some of the conversations we previously discussed and not doing anything about it. And I was like, whoa, wait a minute. Not a good idea.
Right.
Don't have the conversation.
Just don't have them. If you're not going to do anything with it, just don't do it.
They've asked for some more time in a phone call in the next couple of weeks, which I agreed to yesterday. They were like, well, how do you do that? I'm like, well, yeah, stop having the conversation until we can talk. Because if you're not following up on that stuff and you're not communicating, people are going to be like, what? And you might as well not ask.
Yeah, you're kind of shooting yourself in the foot.
Yeah. Yeah. So some practical, tactical, and some not so measurable ways.
Right.
But all actionable.
Most of the time, culture in and of itself, it's not something that you can pick up and touch and feel necessarily. It is an intangible scorecard that we've discussed, but getting your baseline, figuring out where you are, what your current state is, what is your reality of your culture right now? And then what is that ideal state? What is that utopia state? And figuring out a way for you to just measure it. And I think probably the easiest if you're just starting down this road is to have those conversations and ask your employees, your associates, whatever you call the individuals that make up your company, what is your current grade? And you're going to have to speak to this, Tim, because you always make me laugh. But when we're grading ourselves on a quarterly basis, and this is all business to take into account, we always say, we're like, oh, we're a B. And then Tim's like, we're a B plus. Why are you always using the plus minus?
Oh, boy, you called me out on this.
Yeah.
Wow, right in a podcast. Okay.
But I think it's important because
well,
there
it's
is.
Important. It's important in the sense that I'll try and take the serious approach to this. So I was not a good student, as you've heard me say, especially in high school. I got better in college. And I would have teachers that would bump my grade up for my effort in spite of my result. And so I had one teacher in particular that said, I will pass you if you promise to never take another class of mine because you're screwing up my curve, my bell curve, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which I took him up on the offer. And the serious side of that is it requires effort.
Yes.
And the result may not always be there.
Yes.
But if the effort is there, the result hopefully will come, but you're not going to get a result without the effort.
Right. And so when you're thinking about grading yourself, that's a way in which you want to go about it. Don't be so black and white to be like, we're right now in the middle. We are a C. You might very well be a B minus, and that's okay. But keep that into consideration.
Well, and in
give
the context
yourself some
of your question,
grace.
I gave us a higher grade because I knew we put the effort in. We just didn't find the result. And I figured, you know, you don't always get the result you're looking for. But if you put the effort in, a C plus goes to a B minus. That's just my theory. Clearly, business is about getting results.
Right.
You don't always get what you hope for, but you clearly will get nothing if you don't put the effort in.
That's right. That's right.
All right.
Well, I can't wait for more episodes that are driven from questions we're getting from listeners. So please send them our way.
Yeah.
And like Tim said, we hope that you took away a couple of pieces that are tactical, practical. They are a little intangible maybe at times.
But all actionable.
But all actionable. And we hope that this content continues to help you in your quest to remain relevant and stay impactful for all of those that you serve. So we look forward to future episodes where we dig a little bit deeper and have some speakers talk about how they measure and have instituted some ways in their organizations to make sure that their culture is consistent and at the end of the day is a reflection of who they want to be and who they are in the community. So thanks for being with us on another episode of Winning Through Culture. Until next time, be well.